This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place Nation Pop, welcome to part three of our four-part series on Cobra Kai Season 3. Last two episodes, we recapped the first two seasons as well as the season premiere. In our last episode, we went through episodes 2, 3, and 4. This episode, we're going to handle episodes 5, 6, and 7. And to break it down with me, Andy Atherton, your moderator, co-host, whatever you want to call me, is our usual suspects. Starting off, let's get him in here with Scott Shifley. Hey, Scott.
What's up, Andy? How are you doing tonight?
I am great. And, you know, I'm very thankful that everybody knows everybody's name for once. Anyway, so
me too.
Joining us also is Tim Capel. Hey, Tim.
Anthony Anderson. Caught me with my mouth full there. Great to be back and with all the fine folks of Place V Nation. Yeah, enjoying these little rundowns we're doing.
All right. Well, you know, little is kind of a, you know, understatement, as we say. And rounding out our crew is Sean Kidd. Hey, Sean.
Hey, good evening, Andy. Glad to be back and look forward to talking about hopefully more Amanda LaRusso this week.
Well, I mean, we'll probably have an offshoot pod called, you know, The Best of Amanda LaRusso, hosted by Sean Kidd.
As we should. Yeah. And mom of Robbie, mom of Miguel, too, should be in that. But that's a whole other pod show. So.
Oh, the Mills of Cobra Kai.
Yeah, it's great spinoff to Mills of Cobra Kai.
I mean, Diana Bard, Robbie's mom, is pretty hot, so she can be thrown into that.
Here we
She's
go.
A train wreck, but, you know.
What a trifecta. What a great start to this episode. We're already
It's like a Charlie's Angels. Like I threw his throw in Ed Asner as Bob.
Charlie's Angels, the trifecta of Cobra
Holy
Kai.
Shit. I will be actually co-starring on the Stress Eaters of Cobra Kai. Doing a lot of karate lately, and you know what that causes. A lot of stress eating.
That's just you, because karate is life.
You can't walk. You can't walk. Here's some chocolate cake, fatty.
Yeah. All about counterintuitive. It's counterintuitive, but it works.
Yes. It's when we launch our streaming channel, the Karate Plus Network.
Holy shit.
All right, let's reel it back in and get to what we're talking about. We're talking about episode 5 of season 3 that is called Miyagi-Do. It starts off in Okinawa back in 1985, where Daniel Miyagi watches Kumiko perform for the village. Chosen enters the stage and grabs Kumiko, threatens to kill her unless Daniel fights him. Daniel does so, and they fight. And finally, Miyagi, Sato, and all the others use their spinning drums. After defeating Chosen, Daniel asks if he wants to live or die. Chosen says, die. We flash forward to now, facing each other across the bar. Daniel and Chosen glare at each other. Chosen comes over and bows to Daniel. We go back to Johnny. He goes to Miguel's apartment earlier than planned and finds the physical therapist, Braden, working on Miguel's legs as Carmen looks on. The therapist tells Miguel that he's doing great, although all he's doing is lifting Miguel's legs, which Johnny points out. Carmen tells Johnny that Braden is a specialist, and she finally talks to Johnny privately outside in the hall. She says that she's going to respect Miguel's wishes to have Johnny be part of his rehabilitation, but is also going to have the therapist work with him. Johnny apologizes to her. In juvie, Kreese tells Robbie that Johnny was a champion when he knew him. He describes one of Johnny's first championship fights. Robbie says he doesn't care. Kreese tells Robbie that he doesn't deserve to be in juvie, and people have been beating him up in there. Robbie says he doesn't need another sensei. Kreese gives him one parting lesson. In the real world, Robbie might want to learn to strike first. At the LaRusso backyard, Sam trains the other Miyagi-Do students. She says that they have to be ready for the fight when Cobra Kai comes after them. Amanda comes out, discovers this, tells them all to go home. Once the students leave, Sam says that Daniel and Amanda don't get to decide whether she does karate or not. Lopez called Amanda about the incidents at the soccer game, and Sam tells her mother that karate isn't a problem and walks off. Daniel, Kumiko, and Chosen go to a table and drink. Chosen glares at Daniel, who finally tries to make small talk. When Daniel tries to leave to get more drinks, Chosen yells at him and says he'll do it. Once he leaves, Kumiko says that she called Chosen and it was a long time ago, and that Chosen and Daniel fought to the death. She insists that he has changed, but Daniel figures that people like him Chosen do not change. She figures that the two of them have lots to talk about. He returns from the bar with the drink, sits down, and continues to glare at Daniel. Kimiko excuses herself to run errands, and Chosen refuses to have a drink. Brayden then, we go back to Johnny and Miguel. Brayden packs up his equipment, tells Miguel he did great. Once the therapist leaves, Johnny lowers a 1988 copy of Sports Illustrated down on a fishing line to Miguel, tells him to get up and grab the magazine. Johnny pulls the magazine just out of Miguel's reach. When Miguel falls to the ground, Johnny comes down to help him back into his wheelchair. Once he sees him, Miguel tells Johnny that he can't stand no matter what and and wheels off. So that's a lot to unpack in the opening of this episode. You know, we're still in Okinawa, where Daniel fights, comes face to face with Chosen for the first time in, 30 something years. Kreese, we see Kreese starting to try to get his, fangs, so to speak, into Robbie. And we also notice, Sam trying to pick up for her father, as well as, Johnny trying to rehab Miguel in his own way. So, Sean, what do you think of the beginning of Miyagi-Do?
Quite a bit to unpack. I like the opening take back to Karate Kid 2, where Miyagi says to Daniel in the movie, not tournament, this is for real. And I thought it was a good transition to Kreese telling Robbie that Miyagi-Do was good for tournament, but this is real life. So really nice transition for Karate Kid 2 to the Kreese and Robbie dynamic. I really like that. Sam training her mercenaries. And here's the only part I enjoyed about this. One was Amanda LaRusso in a belly shirt. We should have more of this. The little brother Anthony, who's just sitting there stirring the pot.
That's such a piece of shit.
He is a piece of shit. But stirring the pot, and again, Amanda's belly shirt, I'm all in on. And then Chosen just being the asshole is great. And I also thought it was funny that Kimiko's the one that called him, and she's forgiven him for trying to kill the both of them, which I find very far-fetched but very entertaining. And then the final part of this, I really enjoy Johnny shitting on the yoga shaman therapy. That made me laugh. And then I really love the fishing pole with the girl mag, although Playboy probably would have worked better than Sports Illustrated. So, yeah, a lot of good stuff in this opening sequence, and a lot of it made me laugh. So I quite enjoyed the opening.
All right. Yeah. I think this is the only time we see the little brother the entire season, I believe.
Yeah. Yes. In fact, on my second, I missed it on the first watch. I watched it again and I noticed that he was there. So
he looks about half the size he was in the first two.
Well, he's not stress eating. Well, he's still eating, but apparently the stress eating doesn't impact him as much. Mm-hmm. So.
All right, Scott, what do you
write
think
that little piece of shit off the show?
They
write him off and bring back Aisha,
They like the little brother is basically like the Chuck of the Happy Days. Like they bring him around sometimes, but
it's a great analogy.
I'm digging deep for Lee's tonight. But like it was nice to see that like Chosen and like he seems like he's still a killer. And like that's what I think they do in the first part of this episode. They still think that he's still crazy. And that's what Daniel thinks. We're kind of seeing it from his point of view, which I liked, where it's like, what the hell, like Chosen's there for drinks and he's barely talking. And Daniel's like, do you want a drink? And he's like, I don't drink. And, then Kimiko's like, all right, well, I got stuff to do. You guys will figure it out. It's like, what the hell are you doing? The way I feel is like when you're with, like when you're with your significant other and they go somewhere to their friend's house and then like you get dropped off with like the other husbands and boyfriends and you're supposed to like make small talk with it. That's what it seemed like right there with her doing that. And I like Johnny and Miguel's play-by-play. They have great chemistry as well, especially when Johnny has the magazine. And Miguel goes, I can just look up better stuff on my phone, which I thought was great. And then, Sam's trying to have her little minions, like Sean said, and her mom's saying it's not going to work. And with Sam telling her mom that karate isn't the problem and walks off, which is Cobra Kai because they did beat the fucking shit out of that little kid Nathaniel a couple episodes ago. So they still got them hunting them down. But yeah, it was a solid start and a lot of things. They're throwing a lot of stuff at you and you have to be paying attention.
Tim, what did you think of the start of Miyagi-Do?
The Okinawa setting continues to grate on my nerves a little bit. Although it's kind of approaching the point of absurdity, though, with the whole Kimiko just maintaining a relationship with this guy. He's like, hey, remember that time you tried to kill me 35 years ago and then had a death match with this guy that you lost, but he didn't kill you, so you lived on a technicality, basically. Anyway, he's back in town. You guys should hook up. I mean, I don't know if it's supposed to be read as that ridiculous, because again, the show is kind of just the show, right? But we'll continue to track this throughout the episode. The stuff with Robbie and Kreese is, you know, it's on the one hand, like, pretty good character development, but also sort of disappointing to see, because Robbie, you know, originally as presented was kind of this, you know, lost soul who kind of had a good heart. And now he's like, he's pretty much making a heel turn, it feels like, this season. And, you know, you definitely need your antagonists, but, you know, you kind of hoped for better for him. And, I don't know. He's going down a dark path, it looks like. Sam sort of gathering the troops and setting up shop again with the whole Miyagi-Do situation, training them in secret. It does give us a good Amanda scene. I'll give you that, Sean. We're doing a lot of table setting here in this episode, it feels like.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So back in, Okinawa, Chosen takes Daniel to an outlook over the countryside, tells him it's where karate was born. Daniel says he knows about Shimbo-san, Miyagi's ancestor, from the story that Miyagi had told him. When Daniel says that Mr. Miyagi taught him everything he knows, Chosen asks if Daniel said if he's sure and leads him off. The two men go to a dojo with a crane technique scroll on display. Daniel realizes it's Miyagi-Do. Chosen explains that Miyagi's father taught Sato. Sato taught Chosen. Before he died, Sato gave Chosen all of Miyagi's artifacts. Daniel picks up one scroll. Chosen yanks it away from him and says that it's not for him. When Daniel wonders why, Chosen says that Daniel is a foreigner. And Daniel insists that Miyagi wouldn't have kept any secrets from him. In response, Chosen asks Daniel if he's sure about that and says they'll find out. Back in juvie, Robbie does a Google search on Kreese and finds a reference to Daniel Miyagi defanging the Cobra Kai. He also finds emails from Sam in response saying that he is having a hard time and hasn't been in touch. Sean, the bully, comes over and accidentally pulls the plug on the computer and Mock apologizes. Robbie asks why he doesn't just leave him alone. He says it's not going to happen. Robbie always looking over his shoulder. The guard comes in and sends him back to their bunks. As Robbie walks off, Sean tells him that he got lucky. In the mall arcade, Hawk and his buddy run through the place and arrest the young players. Chris is running the ticket counter when the trio come up to cash in tickets that they've stolen. Hawk jumps over the counter and throws prizes to his buddies. They then run off. Chris texts Sam about what happened. Sam is lying in her bedroom when she gets the text. She texts back that she's on her way and sneaks out. At the Diaz apartment, Johnny lights up a kettle grill and calls it Hibachi Grill. Johnny talks about a man named Hibachi set a fire into some lazy Chinese farmers. Miguel points out the errors in Johnny's claim. Johnny points out that he told the fake story so that he could set Miguel's shoelace on fire. He holds Miguel in place and tells him that walk if he wants to put it out bad enough. The fire spreads to Miguel's pants, and Johnny grabs a fire extinguisher and puts it out. Miguel wonders why it didn't work, pointing out that his foot was on fire. He didn't feel it. He's wondering why nothing is working and wheels off. All right, so Scott, we get a little more Miyagi history that maybe, you know, Daniel doesn't know everything he thinks he knows about Miyagi. You know, Robbie does a little research on Kreese, and then we get about the Cobra Kai starting to stir up some more shit. And, you know, we see another one of Johnny's methods to try to get Miguel walk. So what do you think of all this stuff?
It was nice to see that, like, you know, Daniel thinks he's learned everything about Miyagi-Do, but it turns out he hasn't. You know, there were some secrets that maybe Miyagi didn't want to teach him because maybe he didn't agree with them or something. So it adds a little element right there because, and it also, like, shows with Chosen, like, he's trying to help him out because we thought at the end of last episode and the start of this episode that he was coming to whoop his ass for the past 30 years. And then, like, I like Robbie doing, like, the Google search and, like, seeing how, like, Daniel and Miyagi were the ones that took down Cobra Kai. So I'm starting to think, like, you know, I agree with Tim. Like, I can see a heel turn coming. It's definitely been a slow burn since last season, even more now. And that Sean kid's just a dick. Like, he's perfect for Cobra Kai. So when he gets out of juvie, he can join Cobra Kai. But, like, you know, you see Hawk just being an asshole. He's just a straight asshole. And, like, you know, they steal the stuff and from the little kids and everything. And Sam's like, we're going to battle because we don't have – school's not here and everything. And I did like Johnny telling, like, not the politically correct story about the hibachi grill. And then, like, when Miguel's, like, telling him what he did wrong, he's like, yeah, I figured you called me on my bullshit and lit him on fire. And he still can't feel his legs. So I think, you know, they should probably try to find a way for him to do some sitting down karate or something.
Sitting down karate. Okay. Tim, what do you think of this part of the episode?
I will reserve... I'll save my thoughts on the Daniel Chosen stuff for later in the show. I do just want to talk about this is another hot take, maybe. Some of the acting in this series. Like I think that the again, I don't know names, I'm sorry. The kid who plays Miguel is like pretty good at the, you know, the serious, like when he has to emote, and, you know, which we get a lot of with his character, especially in the first half of this season, being quite despondent. But I don't know, there's something about like some of the quippy exchanges that he has with Johnny or with Sam or other characters where he makes these weird expressions where it I don't know how to describe it other than it's like someone who farted really loud and is trying to get away with it, hoping that nobody noticed. And I don't know, it sort of takes me out of the moment every time he does one of those weird faces. And I feel like we get some of that in this unconventional rehabilitation segment that we're seeing with him and Johnny, which is otherwise pretty fun. But I don't know. I just wanted to put that out there.
All right. Sean, what do you think of this section of the episode?
So the Daniel and Chosen bonding, Miyagi-Do, Miyagi artifacts, like he's some ancient architect or like Raiders of the Lost Ark shit. It's interesting. It's different, but these two bonding when they wanted to kill each other. This guy literally almost killed LaRusso. So I'm really having a hard time wrapping my head around it, even though it was 34 years ago that happened. But and then apparently Miyagi has secrets from Daniel's son, which goes against the grain of those love letters he wrote about Daniel's son. So I don't know where that's taking us. Kreese definitely got in Robbie's head as he's doing the research. And again, I don't want to spend too much time on the tropey jailbird story. We know where that's going for sure. I did pop a little bit for Johnny's inappropriate diversity understanding of the story he was telling in the hibachi, which was very funny. And Miguel calling his bullshit out on him. And then I popped big time when he set the shoelace on fire and then put him in a full Nelson. So Johnny really is truly an idiot. And I think if anything, all he did was discourage Miguel at this point, because Miguel went very, very pouty after this. So that's where I'm at.
Okay. All right. So we pick up in Okinawa, where Chosen faces off against Daniel. The two fight. He hits Daniel in several pressure points, knocking him down. Says that Miyagi didn't teach him everything. Chosen says that defense takes many forms. The two go out and fight with bow staffs on a platform. After Chosen knocks him off the platform, they go inside. As they fight, Chosen says that Miyagi-Do instructors came with special techniques to kill their Chinese enemies. Chosen knocks Daniel down and drives a sai into the mat near Daniel's head. As they continue sparring, Daniel said that Miyagi didn't teach him any of the fighting techniques. Chosen suggests that Miyagi didn't think Daniel was ready. He tells Daniel that sometimes a fighter has no choice but to kill and incapacitates him with 3 pressure point strikes. Chosen then tweaks Daniel's nose just as Daniel did to him 30 years ago. Once Daniel recovers, Chosen explains that the Miyagi-Do technique is a way to take away the enemy's tool to wage war. He agrees to teach Daniel said techniques. Back in Johnny's apartment, he writes down a list of ways to restore Miguel's legs. He finally gives up, turns his computer on, does a Google search on the topic. Johnny hears Carmen crying in the courtyard and goes out to talk to her. She says that sometimes she has feelings that she doesn't want Miguel to see. Johnny says, tells her that Miguel will walk again. Carmen tells Johnny that she just wants to see Miguel smile again and goes back in. Before she gets in, Johnny asks if he could borrow Miguel for a few hours. Sam and the other students go to the mall and find Chris, who tell them they're at the laser tag place next door. Sam says that they're going after them. Dimitri has second thoughts, but Sam points out that they're not a school property. In the laser tag arena, Hawk is kicking one of the stuffed dolls he stole. The lights go off, and Sam leads the other students in. Sam tells Hawk that they're there for payback. And Juvie, Robbie goes into the mess hall and sees Sean has two buddies sitting at a table. He looks at them briefly and then starts to walk on. However, Robbie turns back and kicks Sean in the face, knocking him to the floor, and he takes down the other two thugs. Sam, back in laser tag, Sam and the students attack Hawk and his students. Sean, you know, we go a little back and forth between these two fights, with Sean shoving Robbie out into the hallway. The two continue fighting. The guards finally arrive and break Robbie and Sean up. Tori then comes in with two more students and calls Sam out. Sam freezes up with PTSD. Remember that Tori cut her in the school fight. Robbie glares at Sean and smiles. Hawk pins Dimitri to the floor. Sam, frozen, can only watch from the shadows. Tori and the other Cobra Kai students yell at Hawk to finish it. Hawk breaks Dimitri's left arm, and Dimitri moans in pain as the others congratulate Hawk. Walking out, Tori yells to Sam that this isn't over. Hawk looks at his injured former friend in shock and then leaves with the others. Crying, Sam holds her knees. So the action picks up in many places here. We have Daniel and Chosen sparring and Chosen teaching Daniel a few things that he didn't know. We have Ravi finally standing up to the bullies in Juvie, and the showdown between Cobra Kai and Miyagi-Do once again, where Miyagi-Do gets their asses handed to them. So, Tim, we have a lot to unpack once again. So what do you think of this turn of events in these three settings?
Okay, the Daniel Chosen rematch, I guess you could call it, where we are learning the secret Miyagi-Do cheat codes, I guess. This is ridiculous. This is completely ridiculous. This is nonsense. And I guess I don't mind nonsense in this show. Obviously, it's built on a foundation of nonsense. But I guess the problem with it that I have is it doesn't feel very true to Mr. Miyagi's character, right? Like, okay, that there's this secret form of Miyagi-Do karate that he does not teach Daniel. Fine. Okay, I guess I can roll with that. But for some reason, he does think that it is in good judgment to say, well, I won't teach it to Daniel, who I'm quite fond of, and express in my love letters to my betrothed how much Daniel actually means to me. But I guess I will teach him to this this sadistic maniac who tries to kill his fellow villagers and my star pupil. He's changed enough. It's fine. He can learn the homicidal karate techniques. It's cool. Like, what are we doing? You know, like, what? There's no way, like, he would, if he had these secret cheat codes, that he would teach this crazy maniac, however much he reformed. So it's just one of those. It kind of broke this whole subplot for me. So I kind of threw in the towel on that one. But meanwhile, at the laser tag arena, that's where I'm kind of back. I'm back in on this episode with the laser tag riot. Not to be confused with the school karate riot. This is the laser tag riot, which was much smaller, much more contained. But we did have a casualty with Dimitri getting his arm broken. That's some intense stuff. And I'm still not the biggest Dimitri fan in the world, although I do find him much more tolerable this season. Sam's breakdown, I think I would like better if it was a character I liked more who was going through that. Because that's a really, that's a good avenue to explore. Like, you just had your school-wide karate riot. Now you're doing a laser tag riot. And it's very triggering, and you're having panic attack. You're having a panic attack in the heat of the moment here. It's like, whoa, I didn't see that show really. I didn't see the show going there. But they did, and I think it would be good stuff if not for the fact that Sam just really sucks as a character, unfortunately. But otherwise, like, I really liked all this material with the kids. Okinawa, I'm over it. Get it out of here.
Any thoughts on Sean finally standing up to Robbie standing up to the bullies?
No thoughts on that.
Okay. Sean?
All right, so this is where I'm going to disagree with Tim a little bit, and we're going to have to separate absurdity to the greatness of this whole entire, like, things, all these things that just happened. So take away the Karate Kid 2 as the movie sucks. I pot big for Chosen and Daniel going at it. It was almost like, and this is so far-fetched, but it's almost like they're trying to do Rocky versus his Mr. T, and that's really what it is. I loved it. I love that Daniel also came here for a car dealership deal, and instead he's doing karate, and he hasn't even talked to his wife, which is amazing. And
but
I love
much of the
Daniel,
same that he's already done.
Yeah, well, I know, but Daniel shits himself a bit, thinking Chosen's going to kill him. That popped me a little bit. And then the paralysis shots just added to it. I thought it was epic with the music. And it was all, it was just so, and then at the end, as he goes, live or die. And he does the little nose twitch that Miyagi did in Karate Kid 2. And then Daniel also did in it. So I thought that was a nice little throwback. Takeaway if the movie sucked. I really enjoyed the whole paralysis version of Miyagi-ism that nobody knew about. Johnny comforting Miguel's mom, kind of humanizes Johnny, but made me a little upset because I would also like to comfort Miguel's mom in her time of need. But so it's a real transition there between her and Amanda, go back and forth. I still think I'm with Amanda there. The laser tag throwdown is absolutely amazing. And yes, the jailhouse thing, we knew that was going to go and they fought whatever. So, but I like the back and forth intersecting of the two fights. But I just love this whole segment with the laser tag and then Sam with the PTSD. And then Sam actually is the cutthroat one because she asks how many is there. And they tell her there's four. She goes, well, there's five of us. Our odds are better. So a little bit bitchy Sam there. And it was just badass. And he broke Dimitri's arm. And then Tori and Sam's just cowering in fear. And then Tori, literally, as they walk out, looks at Dimitri and calls him a pussy. Holy shit. This is like some of the best, like, 5 minutes of this show that we've watched, and I don't care what anybody says. This was absolutely fantastic.
Scott?
Yeah, Tim, it wasn't Miyagi that taught Chosen that. It was Chosen's sensei, who I guess was contemporaries with Miyagi. And Miyagi knew that, but just didn't teach it. It's not like...
That's something I missed big time then.
Yeah, sorry. I was
okay
trying to figure out how a microphone worked when you were saying that, but... That was only.
No, that's good because I'm basing that then on a totally, like, misunderstanding then.
So I took it as like Miyagi, like I do agree with like Miyagi didn't want him to learn it for a specific reason because it was to kill. But those three pressure point strikes basically made Danielson like Miguel like paralyzed, so he couldn't do anything. So. I was like, damn, this is going to be the end of Daniel right here. But I did like in the apartment when Johnny was writing down the list to restore Miguel's legs. One of them was LSD. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah,
but it
I
was
saw that. Yes.
Just like, and then he went to WebMD and he goes, what's WebMD? Or he's basically Encino Man. So I, I was just doing that. But like, I had texted because we have a group chat, guys, and I had messaged these guys. And I was like, I'm kind of turning on Sam, but this is the episode where I like flipped the switch back on Sam, and I felt bad for her because, like, the PTSD, like, I mean, if you like Tim was even sort of enjoying it with like, oh, I feel for her a little bit, but I just don't like her as a character. I think it humanized her even more because she went in there, was like, we're going to kick ass. And then when she finally came, she didn't even come face to face with Tori. She heard her voice and it just like triggered like the flight or fight response in her. And she wanted to run away. She didn't want to fight. And like you could, the way they shot the shot, Dimitri was looking at Sam when Hawk broke his arm. And this is what pisses me off. I think we're going to get a Hawk face turn because they're planting the seeds of it right now with him looking bad at breaking his best friend's arm. And Sean, you're talking about Chosen and Johnny becoming friends after this. I think if my best friend broke my arm, we wouldn't be friends anymore.
No, I get that. I'll probably shit on that too. But yeah, you can definitely see the seeds planted there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But I, like you said, it was a great like 5 minutes in the battle with with Robbie and Sean was great because Robbie, you know, finally got his revenge on a little bit. But, you know, he obviously not that great of he must not taken the defensive classes because Sean was still whooping his ass. So maybe he should go back to that. But it was nice to see like he finally had enough. I thought that was going to be stretched out a couple more episodes. I'm glad it wasn't. But yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to keep the show fresh, they got to, you know, allegiances got to change here and there. So you're going to have to see, you know, they have to rebook. They got to rebook after WrestleMania every year, you know.
It's like pro wrestling.
Yeah, that's what kind of is. You know,
that's probably why we like it so much.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
All right. So the closing scenes of this episode, Daniel tells Chosen that he understands why Miyagi didn't want him to know the pressure point techniques. Chosen says Miyagi was a man of honor and hopes to be like him. He admits that he felt great shame after their fight and he wanted to die. Chosen tried to overcome his regret, and Daniel tells him that he forgives him. He wishes every rivalry could end that way and invites Chosen to join him in meeting with Kumiko before he leaves. They say their goodbyes and bow to each other. Chosen gives Daniel the scroll he denied him earlier. He tells Daniel keep it for his collection. Daniel respectfully takes it. Johnny takes Miguel on a field trip to a Dee Snider concert, tells the guard that Miguel is a Make-A-Wish recipient. The guard lets him in, and Johnny brings out two beers and tells Miguel that it's not part of therapy, but you know what, have some fun. At the hospital, Sam sits in the waiting room while Dimitri is being treated. Amanda arrives and asks Sam what she was thinking and realizes Sam is crying. Sam tells her mother what happened, and she just wanted to show Cobra Kai that they wouldn't be bullied. As Robbie and Sean walk away, Sean says that he can tell the guards Robbie started the fight because he's no snitch. Robbie says that he isn't either, and Sean nods in respect before walking off. Miguel takes selfies with Johnny, and Johnny admits that he doesn't have Facebook for Miguel to send it to him. Snider calls Miguel up, having heard him that he's a Make-A-Wish kid, and he has the ladies make Miguel's wish come true. Johnny notices that Miguel is tapping his foot to the music and points out to Miguel. Miguel starts moving his foot in shock and then cheers. Danielle meets Kumiko at the Tomy Mall and finds her with Yuna, the girl he rescued 30 years ago from the typhoon. Yuna just happens to be the senior VP of sales with Diona, and she tells him that she's about to save his business. Amanda goes to the Cobra Kai dojo and finds Kreese alone there. She tells him that one of his students broke a boy's arm, and Kreese figures that the boy had it coming. Kreese figures out that who Amanda is, and she tells him that the kids are getting hurt and she's going to go to the police if they continue. She calls Kreese a psychopath and says that she'll shut him down, and then slaps him and leaves. Back at the apartment, Miguel shows Carmen that he can move his foot. She thanks Johnny, who says that it was all Miguel. Johnny goes back to his apartment and checks Facebook on his laptop and finds a selfie of him and Miguel. There's also a friend request from Allie and checks her profile. All right, so Sean, a lot happened in the end of this episode. What'd you think?
Yeah, a lot happened this whole episode. So, okay, I think enough has been said about the Chosen and Daniel stuff, so I'll go right to Dee Snider. I love him. I loved the Johnny with the Make-A-Wish kid and the comment. And I like also how when he starts singing I Wanna Rock, Miguel's foot can move. But unlike when his foot's on fire, Dee Snider makes his foot move. So Dee Snider apparently is a cure for paralysis, which is amazing. Sam traumatized, breaking down to her mom was a pretty good scene and made sense. Sam PTSD, kind of just unloading to her mom because her mom doesn't really understand what's going on. So good Amanda Shine here with her daughter. Robbie earning jail respect, very tropey. I'll move on from that. The Rock Club with the little, I'll tag you with kind of a little bit of a Facebook education there for Johnny. Very convenient, as you said, that Typhoon girl from Karate 2 works for the car dealership, and she is going to save Daniel's business. So this whole trip to Okinawa was worth it, even though this girl hasn't seen him in 36 years. And conveniently, she also got into the car industry, which must have been a Miyagi teacher when he was also over in Okinawa, and her and Daniel can share that together. Amanda, holy shit, confronting Kreese. I popped so big when she slapped him. I wish she would slap me. I thought it was fantastic. I love that she called him Rambo and Kreese was getting in her crawl. Big, big shine for Amanda here. I absolutely loved it. And now Johnny, since he took Miguel to Dee Snider's concert and he can move his feet again, has a new way to get into Miguel's mom's pants. So, and I thought it was a really cool way to end the show with the Ali friend request. And I thought her pictures looked really good. She looked much better than the last time I saw her versus when Homelander fried her after they had coitus. So she looked much better in this picture.
Yeah, she looks much better than she did on The Boys. Yeah. Scott, what do you think of the end of this episode?
It was nice to tie up. You know, I don't know how long Daniel's been away from his family, but he should probably get back. He's probably got some bills to pay, some cars to sell, kids to parent. I don't know how these things go. But, you know, Chosen giving him the scroll was a nice little thing and, you know, brings closure to that. And it shows and it proves to Daniel that, you know, people can change and hopefully he can do that with Johnny Lawrence as well. I hope that's what it's leading to, like, as a callback. The field trip to see Lord D. Snider. I mean, if I was a Make-A-Wish kid, that's a pretty shitty wish to make. But but then, like, I thought he was taking him to a strip club because he's like, the guard's like, he's not allowed in here. It's like, it's a fucking Dee Snider concert. Like, what? Dee Snider should let anyone in. I doubt he's packing them to the rafters anymore.
He has to play
How dare you desecrate Dee Snider?
He has to play all ages shows because no one wants to see him.
The almighty cure for paralysis. How dare you?
I mean, he is Lord Dee Snider because, like, he, you know, they should have just had Christopher Reeves rolled out there listening to I'm going to take it.
Jesus Christ.
So, like, and then, like, Dee Snider is basically, like, pimping out Miguel to these women. He's like, yeah, take care of him tonight. And first off, the girls were, like, TV threes, which in real life are, like, California ones. So... wasn't really great.
They were into the Make-A-Wish kid though.
Yeah, they really were. They really were.
Wow.
But
wow,
like
Scott's going very Sean here.
I love it. I'm absolutely poppied right now.
It's like it's when you get Logan to turn heel. Jesus.
I'm sorry. If I was like any concert I'd go to, if Dee Snider was free, I would be like, I'm still gonna pay $5 to literally go anywhere else. But you know, and then like I will say Amanda slapping the hell out of Kreese was great because it finally gets her involved because she had been on the fringes and they fully developed this character over three seasons. Like when you first saw her, she was like, oh, I'm just Daniel's wife and, you know, we sell cars together. And then last season, she's starting to get in her barbs like, oh, my God, can you believe these guys are arguing about a karate thing? And now it's like, you know, she's taking the fight head on, which we'll see in the next episode with Kreese and, you know, Johnny and Carmen are in the end game. I don't know why we're still crushing on Allie because I know I'm not crushing on the girl that I liked in high school. I can't speak for you guys, but I'm still not crushing. But like Johnny's like, she's the best girl. But yeah.
Well, it's because Johnny hasn't had anything since Allie probably.
Miguel's mom, in all fairness, is much better than Shawn Michael I. Allie. So I'm just saying.
Tim, close it out.
Yeah, it's another one of those moments where you feel like this was 35 years ago, but just yesterday to the characters just being stuck, just frozen in time. I will say that this all makes sense when you consider that Typhoon Girl is now the VP of sales or whatever for the distributor who... Daniel has to make a new deal with, because this is all just, it's proof of my unified karate cinematic universe God theory, that there's a karate deity sitting at the top of all of this, overseeing and directing events. And this episode just seals it. It just really does. It's, it, it really just has a very calming effect on the viewer when you watch the show under that context, where just these piles and piles of coincidences suddenly aren't coincidences. They're by design, because the karate god is a trickster god above all else, you see. I had forgotten how long this Robbie and Juvie subplot really goes on. It feels like we shouldn't still be talking about it, but he's still there, and we kind of ought to be wrapping it up by now. I'm about over that one. But Lord D. Snyder, healing paralysis with the power of rock is pretty damn great. The Make-A-Wish grift is also pretty damn great. Echoing Scott's sentiments about the California threes, just tremendous stuff all around.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was a great episode. But we're gonna move on to episode number 6, which is called King Cobra. And this one starts off with another flashback. We're in Vietnam in 1968. With a young Kreese gets a letter from home from his girlfriend and his fellow soldier Ponytail yanks away the photo from him, which is a woman. Ponytail calls over another soldier, Twig, and shows him the photo, and they joke with Kreese about it. Kreese gets called over to Captain Turner's tent, and around back, Kreese finds him practicing on a makeshift sparring pole. Turner breaks out one of the poles and asks Kreese if he has a death wish because he walks point. Kreese says that he's not afraid of death. Turner tells Kreese that he can make a difference. Kreese says he's there to serve his country and be a hero. Turner then says he's forming a team that will go into North Vietnam, and he'll train that team in guerrilla combat as well as hand-to-hand. If Kreese survives, he'll get a promotion, maybe a medal. If not, he'll show up on the MIA list in 30 years. Turner tells Kreese if they're going to do it, they'll need the absolute best. And back to the present, Kreese goes out watching high school sports, recruiting the strongest, most brutal students, promising them that he'll weld them into ultimate weapons. Johnny in his apartment is chatting online with Allie. Allie describes her family and career and admits that now she doesn't know the first thing about Johnny. She asks what he's up to, and Johnny hesitates to respond. Over at the LaRusso home, Daniel arrives home and Amanda greets him. He gives her the gifts he bought for the family, saying the two of them should go to a resort alone next weekend. Amanda tells Daniel that the kids are at his mother's because of Kreese. At the Cobra Kai dojo, the thugs are talking about the fight at the mall. Mitch is boasting about how they show no mercy, including Hawk when he broke Dimitri's arm. Hawk looks concerned, and Tori comes over and tells Hawk that she didn't think they would attack. Hawk says the Miyagi-Do students got what they deserved and for what they did to Miguel. The new recruits come in, and Hawk remembers their leader, I think it was Xander, from what they used to bully at school, including Hawk. Kreese tells them that to welcoming to their class and new students. Mitch flinches at Kyler when he gives him an unflattering nickname. Hawk privately tells Kreese that they're not Cobra Kai material, and Kreese says that they're natural athletes, and that's what the dojo needs. Everyone falls in. Kreese tells the new recruits that joining Cobra Kai is a privilege, and they have to earn their position in the dojo, and they should prepare themselves for combat. So we learn a little bit more about Kreese, and how he got his little more training and how he became so ruthless. We see a little more with Johnny, you know, interacting with Allie. Daniel finally gets home from Japan, and at the Cobra Kai dojo, Kreese's recruitment mission has been a success with all these new students showing up. So, Scott, what do you think of the beginning of this episode?
It was you see that, you know, we had seen before, we talked about it last podcast, that Kreese, you know, joins the army and, like, you know, he seemed like a kind of decent person, but when he gets called over by Captain Turner, you see that Captain Turner molds Kreese and basically indoctrinates him, because he's like, why are you fighting like that? And he said, if you want to fight the enemy, you got to fight like the enemy. And you see him doing like hand-to-hand karate. And then, like, you know, I figured it took them this long to get to, like, the popular kids we had seen before, because, like, Kreese recruits Kyler and, like, a couple of his friends as well, and also, like, this girl that's on the basketball team and, like, throwing elbows at everyone. Johnny trying to chat online with Allie is great, because, like, we'll get to it a little bit, but he types her, like, a suicide bomber's note or something later on. But, yeah, it's just amazing. And you know, with the new guys being recruited into Cobra Kai, it truly is like bad guys. Because last time we saw Kyler was like he was being a dick to, you know, Dimitri, Hawk, and Miguel before he got his ass whooped, and then I guess got sent away to like juvie for the summer. But you know, Kreese just wants the best of the best, like he was recruited. So it's going to be interesting to see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Tim, what do you think of the beginning of King Cobra?
I like that we are continuing to follow that, the early history of Kreese continuing to follow that strand. This will not be the final word on the matter, but good to pull up with young Kreese once again. And yeah, we're seeing some new recruits replacing the little kids who were sent packing earlier in the season. But now we get to see Hawk's issues on display, sort of clouding his better judgment when it comes to the philosophy of Cobra Kai, strike first, strike hard, no mercy. But he's remembering this time period in his life when he was bullied by these assholes who very much are Cobra Kai material, but not in his mind because he's got personal beef with them. So, yeah, good interpersonal drama there. And oh gosh, I just have lost my train of thought once again, has left the station. So I guess that enough said there.
Yeah, these are the type of recruits that, you know, you when we first meet Cobra Kai in the first Karate Kid, these are the kind of kids that Kreese recruited. And, you know, he wanted to, I guess, weed out.
Right.
Because when Johnny, you know, when he brings it back, he's got to, you know, get what he gets. And that's it. You know, you're not going to get off the bat. You're not going to get these, you know, stellar athletes and the badasses. You know, you have to, you know, work your way to get them in your dojo. Sean, what did you think of the opening of this episode? Are you on mute?
I was on mute. I apologize. I like the opening, continuing Kreese's origin in Vietnam with his buddies kind of playing up his friends and him and where he's at and his captain. Who's played by, we made fun of it earlier, looks a lot like Anthony Michael Hall, but is actually actor Terry Serpico. He was a big bad on Designated Survivor, and he was also a really great bad guy on the TV show Yellowstone, for anyone that hasn't seen that show. But he plays a great villain. He wants Kreese on his team, and you guys have talked about it. He wants the best of the best, et cetera, et cetera. So I like that it continues to give insights into the now of why he is who he is, and how he's going to change or what he becomes. Johnny struggling with Ali's response was very, very funny. I think Scott put it well, kind of like a stalker or a Unabomber kind of thing. Danny coming home after not talking to his family for God knows how long with soy sauce Kit Kats, which sounded absolutely disgusting. Chris Jericho armbar reference when they discussed breaking Dimitri's arm. So I don't know of any Chris Jericho armbars that break arms, but I guess they wanted to get a wrestling reference out there. And then the Kreese recruiting Kyler and the old bullies for Hawk, I thought was kind of a nice little twist because they are the biggest assholes we've seen on this show. And I also like the thought of the recruiting combat initiation. So I look forward to talking about that.
All right. So Miguel comes over to Johnny's apartment. Johnny straps Miguel into a harness and tells him that he's not ready for badass training yet. He lets go of the line and tells Miguel that he made a better fall that time. They take five. Miguel tells Johnny that Rosa has been talking a lot about him recently. She's grateful for Johnny taking Miguel to the Snyder concert. When Miguel notices Johnny's computer writing, he asks what it's about. Johnny says it's a Facebook message to a babe from high school. Miguel recognizes Allie's name and tells Johnny not to send him the too long message he typed up. He says that shorter messages are cooler, and Johnny's message looks creepy. He realizes that Johnny liked all of Allie's photos and admits that he got all amped up.
Miguel says they can salvage a response and sets up a kick-ass profile for Johnny. First, he asks Johnny for photos, and Johnny goes to get something. Amanda tells Daniel what happened with Sam and Cobra Kai thugs, and she insists that Kreese is sick and his students broke Dimitri's arm. Daniel wants to go over there, but Amanda says they have to stop the violence, and they're going to do it her way, going to the police. Kreese tells his students to prepare for combat, and the other Triple X, I guess his name was, recognizes Hawk. He and his friends laugh at Hawk, and Kreese comes over and tells him and Mitch to fight. They fight, and Mitch scores the first hit with a kick. He then takes down Mitch and scores a point. Kreese tells him to finish Mick, and he finishes him, Mitch, with a kick, with a punch in the face. He tells him that he lost to an untrained fighter. Now he's going to take a spot in the team. Hawk speaks up and says that Mitch has been loyal to the dojo. Kreese says that Mitch isn't Cobra Kai material, and only the strong survive. We go back to the past, and Turner trains a young Kreese in fighting, and the older Turner takes Kreese down. The captain tells Kreese not to lose concentration in a fight, and it's kill or be killed. If they surrender, Turner tells his men never to trust the enemy and asks if they're ready for their mission tomorrow. They said they are, and Turner gets a letter from home. After reading it, he tells the sergeant not to tell Kreese about it so Kreese isn't distracted. All right, Tim, so, you know, we see the whole thing with, you know, Miguel giving Johnny kind of a Facebook lesson, and the new recruits starting to, you know, show their stuff and more weeding out of the weaker members of Cobra Kai. And plus, we go back and we see, you know, more of the Kreese origin story. So what'd you think?
We do get some more of the I just farted acting from Miguel. But I do definitely enjoy just his banter with Johnny and the whole, you know, don't send that, you look like a stalker. And then the realization that he just liked all of her photos because he doesn't think about these, you know, these social cues, right? In social media, just because, again, Encino Man here. So very funny. Clearly we're building up to some kind of big reunion between Johnny and Allie, which I've had mixed feelings about, but I kind of like the way they're handling it, where they're, you know, there is a proper setup to this. So I sort of like where that's going. Miguel is basically just walking now, and we just, you know, solved that problem and we're good. So I guess after, I don't know, six episodes of him, first he's at death's door, then he's out of the woods but can't walk. Now he's ambulatory at least. So I don't know. You could say it felt a little bit rushed or divorced from reality, one of the two. But again, the show is the show. We need to get Miguel back into play, so I'm fine with that. Ultimately, and yeah, the stuff with the new Cobra Kai recruits, sort of like seeing how this shakes down, and you wonder if some of those guys who washed out did not make the cut, if they will be making some kind of play down the line. So it remains to be seen.
All right. Sean, what do you think of this section of this episode?
Like Tim, I enjoy the Johnny Miguel scenes. I like that, again, I'm laughing at Miguel falling, but I also like at the comment, Johnny says your legs are still pussies, which was very unsympathetic. I think the Johnny Facebook lessons are pretty great. He goes, I thought all the red cheeks on Facebook meant the girls are hot. So that made me laugh as well. And I loved the Kyler that takes down Mitch, I believe, and he does a little suplex, and then he does an alligator roll, and then he finishes him, and then they kick him out. So I thought that was really cool. And then they did the flashback to Kreese's training, and they talked about the distractions. And I gotta assume that the letter for home is quite possibly a Dear John letter. That would probably be my guess. And they probably don't all want that to distract them. So that's what I think.
All right. Scott?
I'm going to start with the past stuff with, like, you see, like, Kreese fighting, like, the younger Kreese fighting, and, like, he, like, holds back a little bit, and like old man Turner takes him down and whoops his ass, and like, you know, that like lays in like, you know, never give up, never give him a second to like be able to do that. And then Kyler finishes off Mitch, or as I like to call him, great value Dustin from Stranger Things. So like, you know, and then like you're starting to see that like Hawk's like, oh, like he's like trying to get Mitch to stay, but then Kreese is like, nope, he's not Cobra Kai material, next. And Amanda, who's finally is like, I'm tired of these karate wars going on in the valley. Let's go to the police. It's like, oh my God, finally someone's acting like an adult. So you, like, we see that. But like Tim and Sean said, the Facebook stuff is great. You know, Johnny not realizing that you look like a creeper if you like everyone's photo that's ever been posted. So, and also when, never mind, they haven't got to that part yet. Sorry.
Johnny's like somebody who like never got on Facebook for like the first like decade, and then gets on Facebook like an old, like somebody's dad, like, or just your one friend that just never did it and just sits there and likes. And back in the early days of like, you know, getting those email jokes, I had a friend of mine that would respond to everything and say, that was funny. No. Ha ha ha. I'm like, dude, you don't have to respond just because somebody forwards you a joke. Well, they, you know, they took the time. No, it takes 2 seconds to write somebody's name in an email. So that's what Johnny feels like to me.
It's probably a reply all too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was quite often. So back to the present, Johnny shows Miguel all the old photos he has of himself, and he's not wearing a shirt in any of them. Miguel said that they'd be better off going with present day photos. Johnny figures that he should get photos of him doing all the same thing that Allie's doing in her photos, and suggests that they photo mat it. Amanda and Daniel go to the police station. I gotta say, I was watching this with my girlfriend, and she was like, how Sean feels about, you know, Amanda LaRusso, that my girlfriend loves Johnny Lawrence, and was like, oh my God, when she saw those pictures. So anyway, Amanda and Daniel go to the police station to file a restraining order. The officer there determines that an emergency protection order has already been filed by Kreese against Amanda. Kreese says that Amanda showed up at his dojo after hours and struck him. Amanda does admit that she did, much to Daniel's surprise, and the record shows that Kreese is a Green Beret who received a Silver Star. The officer tells Amanda that she should be more considerate and says that it's up to a judge to settle it out. He tells Amanda that she can file her own order, but it won't make any difference. As they leave, Amanda tells Daniel that she has another idea, a quote-unquote nuclear option, but hates it. At the Cobra Kai dojo, Tori fights a new female recruit, Sarah. She takes her down and nicks the recruit's tooth off with a kick. Kreese congratulates Tori and orders Sarah off the mat. He then says Kyler's friend in, who I believe his name is Brucker, is the character's name. I'm looking here on the IMDb. He's like the, you know, real douchey friend of his, of Kyler, even more. And Hawk insists on taking him on and takes off his shirt, revealing his Hawk tattoo. Kreese tells the scorer to put down the flags, and Hawk quickly takes down his opponent. When his opponent begs him to stop, he continues to knock him down and beat him unconscious while remembering when he used to taunt him in high school. Hawk spits on the student and walks away, while Kyler and the other students look on shocked. As he goes, Hawk glares at Kyler. Kreese says that they can call it a day and tell someone to pick the opponent up. Meanwhile, Johnny's posing for a photo, reading the Queen of Hearts. He's satisfied with the photo, tosses the book in a nearby garbage can, and leaves. They go to an art gallery and take more posed photos. They stop for sushi while Miguel takes the photos. Johnny goes to wash his mouth out, and Tori comes by and sees Miguel. She calls to Miguel and wonders how she knew he worked there, and explains that she works two jobs because her mother isn't doing well. She apologizes for not coming to see him at the hospital and admits that she felt guilty about what happened. She then tells him that all the Cobra Kai students are doing what they can to get back at the Miyagi-Do students. Miguel points out that no one else got hurt and only he cared about the two of them. Tori works out, wonders that if he only went out with Sam to get Tori's attention, and he tells her that she needs help. She figures out that she's crazy. He's saying that she's crazy and storms off. All right. So, Sean, we get, you know, the whole, you know, montage of Johnny trying to basically replicate all of Allie's photos. We get Amanda going to the police station and finding out that, you know, she's the one that's been in trouble. And we get, Hawk basically kicking the crap out of one of his former bullies. So unpack this.
Yeah, the Johnny photos from high school were funny. And he makes the Miguel giving him shit about not having any photos with a shirt on. And then Johnny makes a comment about we need some greased up baby oil to go out and take all these other little cultural photos he wants to do. And Miguel's not going to do it for him. So, yeah, the whole picture thing was very funny. And Johnny trying to be cultured in all these different poses. Very, very funny. The guy is definitely, we keep calling him Encino Man, but literally has no concept of real life in the year of 2020. It's amazing. I thought it was kind of cool that Kreese filed the protection order first. That was kind of a nice little swerve there. Heartless Tori chipping the teeth of the new recruit. I absolutely loved Hawk kicking Kyler's Brooks. Little buddy's ass. What's his name?
Brooks, I believe.
Brooks or whatever. But it was kind of cool because what he did a belly-to-belly suplex, and then he just pummels the shit out of him, beats him up, and spits on him. So really badass Hawk here. And then I appreciated Miguel basically telling Tori that she's crazy shit because she is one crazy bitch.
Yeah. Hawk basically goes all Ralphie on him, basically.
He sure did. He did. He went full Ralphie on him and just beat the shit out of him.
Yeah. All right. Scott, what did you think of this part?
Like Sean said, the picture part was hilarious. Just with... like Johnny just being so out of touch with everything. And like, this shows how smart Kreese is. He went to the cops first after she slapped him. He probably went that night and got the order of protection. So it makes them look crazy. Just like how he told Johnny in the last season, like, oh, I was just paying the bills for you while you were away. But he was the one that took over the Cobra Kai dojo and got like the handshake deal and everything. So like, it shows how smart he is. And he thinks from every angle. With that, and like, I love Tori fighting because it shows that she's just a badass. And then Hawk, you know, getting years of pent up revenge, like you said, the Ralphie thing from the Christmas story is a good comparison with that. And Tori just, you know, having daddy issues, and it shows when she's like going on super strong for Miguel. It's like, oh, so you admit that it's crazy? And it's like, yeah, well, all this is sort of your fault. If you hadn't taken over, you know, taking over what had happened and called Sam out on the morning PA, this wouldn't have happened. So,
yeah, it's all Tori's fault. Yeah, Kreese is the master manipulator. Tim, what do you think of this section of the episode?
I love that people continue to underestimate Kreese because they just think he's this old crank, basically. And he might be, you know, out there and have some wild ideas, but as I have said previously, he has his shit together. He knows what he's doing, and he is one step ahead of the LaRussos here. So that was a great bit with them going to the police, getting the restraining order. I kind of saw it coming, but in a way that it didn't feel weak or like it was too predictable. It was just sort of, well, they've done a good job of educating us as to what kind of character Kreese is. So it just felt really consistent with his character, the way he's been presented and built up to this stage. So I was all for that. Liked this little, I don't know what you call it, reunion, so to speak, between Tori and Miguel. Some things that needed to be said there were said. And yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, this thing really does go back to Tori as the instigator. Like she pretty much struck the match that started the school-wide karate riot. Yeah. And I'm glad we got some acknowledgement of that, really. The shirtless Johnny high school baby oil stuff was, you know, some good beefcake. What do you want?
Not much else to say about that. All right. Amanda invites Armin Zakarian to dinner at the LaRusso's house. He finally asks why he's there. Daniel says that they want to talk business. Amanda wants him to evict Kreese from the strip mall. Armin wonders why he should do that when Kreese is so much better than Johnny and the former tenant. Amanda says that Kreese is unpredictable and violent. And Armin figures that Kreese pay his rent predictably, and that's all that matters to him. When Amanda offers to pay double the rent, Daniel balks, and Amanda reminds him that it's the nuclear option. Armin demands triple and likes the double dip when Amanda points out he can rent the space next to someone else. He agrees to the deal, and Daniel insists that he get Kreese out the next day. The next day, Kreese comes into his office at the dojo, and he looks at the relics from the war, and in them is a photo of him with ponytail and twig. We flash back to the past, and Turner's team goes into the field. Ponytails plants explosives on an enemy control hut, and Turner tells Kreese over the radio to set off the charge when Ponytail clears. Enemy interference comes in, and Turner tells Kreese to set the charge off immediately, despite the fact that Ponytail is still there. As Ponytail runs off, an enemy soldier knocks him out from the side, and more soldiers capture Kreese and his buddy Twig, who is with them. The soldiers gather all of Kreese's team together and force them to their knees, including Turner. Turner curses out Kreese, and Kreese says he couldn't sacrifice Ponytail. One of the soldiers kills a prisoner, shooting him in the head, and Turner tells Kreese that it's his fault for hesitating. Back to the present, Kreese remembers what happened. Armin comes in. When Kreese greets him, Armin tells him they got a higher offer for the space, so he's kicking him out. Kreese points out their contract, and Armin says that all of his contracts have escape clauses, and he has eviction papers. When Kreese refuses to leave, Armin calls in two of his thugs that are his nephews, and he says that they're going to help him pack. Kreese irritably notes that he had just cleaned the blood off the mat and prepares to fight. So we go back. So we get the whole nuclear option here, as well as a little more in Kreese's past. So Scott, what do you think of Amanda basically, you know, having to have dinner with Zakarian to make this deal?
He's just a dirty man. Like when she's like, oh, the bread's good for dipping, and he dips it in the whole pan. I was like, just throw the whole pan out. We might have to light the couch on fire where he's sitting after this. And you know, Amanda, you know, for some people who had some money issues two episodes ago, she's throwing some money around willy nilly. Just was like, double the rent. She's like, oh no, just make it triple. And then you see, you know, the reason why, basically, like, I want to say like the deer hunter, where Kreese is like, sees one of his best friends murdered in front of him for hesitating, and he's all captured. But with showing with the silver star, it proves that he gets out. So it's going to be interesting to see where it goes from there. And I will say Kreese did have a good line where he said he just cleaned blood off the mat, but he's going to have to clean it up again. So it was pretty interesting. We got to see more of Kreese, which I know I said last episode, I didn't really want to see that because I still just want to hate him and don't feel any, like, feel bad for him ever, but, you know, it was nice to see.
Yep. Tim, what are your thoughts?
So we get to see what the nuclear option is, which is basically Amanda going to speak to the manager and throwing some money around. Money, again, that it's a little bit suspect that they could just cough up, but maybe Typhoon Girl, like, came through on a loan or something on top of re-upping their contract or whatever, who knows. But they seem to be on better financial footing now, and she's gonna basically outbid Kreese, and this guy is, I guess, gonna break their contract. But this is the Karate Cinematic Universe, so we can already guess that's not gonna go very well. Like, you can say, I got a better offer, you're evicted, go pound sand, but if you just beat my ass in your karate dojo, then, I mean, all bets are off. And that was a really great line about the blood on the mats. Just clean this up. Cool stuff there. Continue to enjoy these flashbacks. Some of the odd character names notwithstanding. Twig and Ponytail and frickin' Frack and, you know, just all these, like, again, named characters but are not really in the show, just sort of there. But yeah, I am, like Scott, pretty curious to see how is young Kreese going to get out of this one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sean, what are your thoughts?
So, I continue to like the young Kreese flashbacks. One thing we didn't mention, the guy who plays young Kreese is actually Kreese's real life son in real life. I don't know if you guys knew that or not, but
wow,
really?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, that's his real life son. Wow. So I thought crazy. That was kind of cool. Yeah. So and just the trauma that Kreese has been through now. He's seen his best friend get shot in the head up close. He failed his mission, which is going to weigh on him. There's a lot of different things going on. So again, like everybody else, I'm curious to see how this plays out, because him screwing up the mission, and on top of that, his best friend being shot, even with his ridiculous name. And Tim, I think most 80s movies, I mean, you got the Outsiders had, what, Pony Boy and all these other different
names. No, actually, it goes to, you know, in Vietnam, they went by nicknames.
I preferred him against the 80s thing, so I'm going to stick with that. But I agree.
Okay. Fair enough.
I like Kreese becoming a POW. LaRusso's going after Johnny's landlord. He is disgusting pig. I thought that was kind of a nice way to try to get rid of the Cobra Kai dojo. And I got to say, even though he was a disgusting pig dipping his food, I thought the Italian food looked amazing, and the fat shit in me was really Italian food after I was watching that scene. So, yeah, so good shit here. I really liked it.
Yeah. A little chicken cacciatore action going. All right, so closing out the episode, Miguel falls again. Johnny pulls him back up and tells him to focus. He asks what the problem is. He tells Miguel that seeing Tori is no big deal. Miguel points out that they spent all day trying to make Johnny look like something he isn't for his ex. Johnny asks if Miguel's giving up. Miguel tells Johnny that he's the one giving up because Johnny let Kreese take his dojo and make his students think that he was weak. Johnny said that it was a mistake to begin with to bring back Cobra Kai. Unimpressed, Miguel tells Johnny that he helped a bunch of people and then walked away like a pussy. He then tells Johnny that he's a sensei, whether or not he can see it or not. Johnny points out that Miguel is standing, and they hug as Miguel thanks Johnny, and Johnny thanks Miguel for what he did for him. Later on, Johnny looks at the photos that Miguel took and figures that he looks ridiculous. He deletes the photos, says Ali messes that he didn't have much direction in his life, and then things got better, and he became a sensei. He gave up for a while, but can't give up. He has a long way to go to be a better man and a better teacher. Johnny figures that he can help the kids face the tough world, face up for the tough world that they're going to face, and that's who he is. He then changes it and just tells Allie that he hasn't been up to much. At the dealership, Louie and Amush thank a customer for her business. He has Amush hook her up with a rental and apologizes for Amush being slow. Amush reminds Louie that he trained him, and Louie ignores it, walks off, while Amush tells the customer that Louie is the owner's cousin. Daniel and Amanda are watching the floor, and Daniel figures out that everything is going their way with the dealership back in business and Kreese out of their lives. Amanda essentially says, "I told you so," and boasts how she beat Cobra Kai. They kiss, and Armin calls Daniel from Kreese's office and says that the deal is off. Kreese takes the phone, and that Daniel said it was a nice try, but he can't end a war with diplomacy, and tells him to prepare students for battle because now it's open season on them and Daniel. A snake slithers out of one of the cars in the dealership floor, and customers run. Anoush jumps into Louis's arms. Louis runs when the snake comes at him. Amanda and Daniel look at each other in shock, and that is the end of the episode. So, Tim, how did you think this one closed out?
Pretty strong closer. It's hard to go out stronger than a snake in the car slithering out onto the dealership floor. Do we know what kind of snake this is? I gather it's not an actual cobra. Don't think you're going to find those in the valley. But who knows if this is an actual, like, deadly venomous snake that they have threatened multiple lives with now. This is just a day in the life in Cobra Kai, really. We see how useless law enforcement is, and how easily manipulated they are by the villains of this series. We see that throwing money around doesn't really get you anywhere either. At the end of the day, what do you have to fall back on? Karate. That's what it is. That's where it's at. So I look forward to learning just how karate will win the day once more in season 3 of Cobra Kai.
Karate solves all the problems. Sean, what do you think of the end of this episode?
So I enjoyed we didn't get to see it physically, but apparently Kreese kicked the big nephew's landlord mob's heavy's asses, and the landlord apparently, which is pretty funny.
Kicked all their asses.
I wish I could have seen 80-year-old Kreese do that, but unfortunately we didn't get to see that. I also enjoyed Miguel giving Johnny shit. So now we know that D. Snyder and giving your sensei shit equals paralysis going away, because those are the two things that made Miguel be able to stand and the other one to make him move his foot. So, paralysis, you don't need modern medicine. You just need D. Snyder and yelling at your sensei. I like the ending. I guess in my thought process, when exactly did the snake get put in the car? Did Kreese stealth his way in and camo by a rope from the roof and go into the car and then get out? Like, I don't know how the Snake got there, and it still confuses me a little bit. And finally, a few episodes ago, these guys couldn't get a single customer. Why the fuck is it all packed in there all of a sudden? Doesn't make a lot of sense. I guess they forgot about the Karate Footloose and all as well. So that's how I feel about the ending of this.
Scott, what do you think?
I think that maybe when Daniel talked to the Doyono people after, because that girl that he saved his life, he was able to get the exclusive contract. So that's why everyone's coming to him. At least that's my headcanon.
Thank you for bringing context to a very complicated question. I appreciate it.
No worries. And I also think that Kree sent a Cobra Kai student over there to put the snake in the car and then timed it with the phone call just so everything would go perfectly. But like, you know, like Tim said, we had to suspend disbelief in the
probably
KCU.
One of the potential buyers.
Yeah. But
I like how you fought through that, by the way.
The snake, you know, the snake may have been the karate god, actually. in a more recognizable form to interact with
it was
terrify
Voldemort.
The populace.
Voldemort yeah. in there. Yeah.
Exactly. Hey, you brought up Harry Potter, not me, Sean. Yeah. But I will say, like, I did like Johnny, like, typing out this thoughtful and nice thing to Allie, and I was like, nah, this is pretty stupid, and literally just writes, not much, you, and he's typing like he's Vince McMahon, so not that great, but yeah, it's just a good episode, and I wish, like, you know, how Tim, we were talking about Carrie Fisher last episode, it was like, I wish we could get, like, Pat Moriarty as Mr. Miyagi to come back to fight Kreese. Because I just wanted to see that when the snake comes out and with Kree saying it's open season on them and Daniel. So I was just like, oh, we should get Pat Moriarty back and, you know, get him to come back and fight Kree once and for all.
That would be something.
Well, you never know what could happen in the KCU universe.
Yes, the KCU is a magical place. So that brings us to episode number 7. It is called Obstaculos. I'm guessing, hopefully I didn't butcher that too bad. So it starts off with Sam practicing in the dojo and goes outside to get her water. Tori confronts her and Sam freezes up, saying that Sam let Dimitri get his arm broken because she didn't defend her friend and ran off instead. The two girls fight and Tori tells Sam that she deserves much worse than a broken arm. They continue fighting and Tori tells Sam what happened to Ravi and Miguel is all her fault. She beats her down and Sam remembers Miguel falling in the high school battle. Tori grabs Sam's hair and tries to drown her in a decorative pool. Sam wakes up from her nightmare. Excuse me. Robbie is walking around on crutches through an improvised obstacle course. It's Miguel. Whoever typed this should be smacked. He's walking around on crutches through an improvised obstacle course in his parking lot, one that Johnny has set up. Johnny is watching, and then he has him press a kegger. When Miguel manages to master some planks that Johnny has set up, Johnny throws an exercise ball at him, knocking him over. Eventually, Miguel gets the point to a point where he can catch the ball and not fall over, and Johnny high-fives him. They then throw Miguel's crutches in a wheelchair into a dumpster. Back in Johnny's apartment, Miguel brainstorms names for Johnny's new dojo. Johnny is busy looking at Allie's messages and isn't paying attention and wonders how long it takes for Facebook messages to come back. Miguel explains that messages are instantaneous, and Johnny wants a name that says it's badass. He suggests that they use Cobra with a K, but realizes that KKK is probably a bad idea. Johnny figures that they need some new students. Miguel tells him that he's going to go back to school that day, and they can do some recruiting. Johnny tells Miguel to let him worry about that. Sam goes to the living room and finds Daniel and Amanda waiting for her. She points out that they're acting weird and asks what's going on. Daniel says that they want to make sure Sam can defend herself from the Cobra Kai bullies. Amanda tells Sam that Daniel's going to reopen Miyagi-Do and she's 100% on board. Sam says that she's not ready to go back and get back into the action and walks away. Daniel goes after her and asks what's going on, and his daughter tells him that she's not doing karate very well. Amanda says that Sam hasn't been sleeping well lately and Daniel worries that he hasn't spent enough time with his daughter. He suggests that Sam play hooky and Daniel go to work his Miyagi magic. So, Tim, we start off with a dream sequence, and then we go into a training sequence, and now we see what's going on with Sam, and if it turns out Amanda is now 100% on board with Miyagi-Do reopening. So, what do you think of the start of this episode?
Yeah, Tori now invading Sam's dreams. kind of an obvious dream sequence. I mean, especially when Sam is literally getting drowned in the koi pond. But gives us some insight into what is going on in her head. This is some serious subject matter being dealt with by a pretty nonsense show. It's the type of thing where you kind of want them to tread lightly. But I kind of think they're handling it basically okay. Samantha just kind of sucks as a character, so you wish that somebody else had gotten this plot. Once more, maybe Aisha, right? If she was still on the show, I could see, just because I kind of like that character and actress better, could just probably do more with the material. But that's just wishful thinking, fantasy booking. And her reluctance to, I guess, continue with karate, even though both of her parents kind of surprisingly are very much on board with this. pretty much saying, nobody else has your back. You're going to get attacked again. The police are useless. Your parents have kind of fucked this up. We made the wrong play. So we're just going to have to teach you karate now, because this is what we do in this world. We use karate to solve all our problems. And you just need to understand that. So that whole bit was a little bit, I don't know. but that's another one of those, context of the show is important. Suspension of disbelief. So you roll with it. Miguel getting stronger. We get this. I love how we have a very typical like 80s montage scene. And that's pretty much it. That's all we need to see to understand that he is fully back in the game, walking like nobody's business, throws away his wheelchair, crutches. I mean, these are expensive medical devices. Somebody could still use those. But
or you could have pawned them and Johnny could have made
some. Oh, money. Sure. Pawned them off, right? Got to be worth some money. But it certainly gets the point across that he's back, baby.
Mm-hmm. Sean, what do you think of the beginning of this episode?
The dream sequence, probably one we've seen in 100 other movies, but it did end with Sam drowning, which, and then she wakes up, so that was kind of interesting. She actually did drown because she was motionless, but anyway, so probably the best acting of her career. I'm going to shit on Sam a lot this episode because there's way too much of her in this. The crutch rock training and lifting beer kegs was really bad, but was really great. So again, so if we really think about the recovery process, it's Dee Snider yelling at your sensei, crutch rock training through cones obstacle courses, and lifting beer kegs will cure all your paralysis in the karate cinematic universe. So pretty amazing stuff, which will explain how Miguel recovers really, really fast. Johnny waiting for alley responses was pretty funny. You brought up the KKK thing, which Johnny's just so clueless. And then whiny little bitch Sam wants to quit on reopening of Miyagi-Do, even though she went out of her way to train all these other guys. Now she wants to quit on the thing that she was trying to reopen and whine like a little baby.
All right. Scott, what do you think of this start of this episode?
I'm not going to lie. I got sucked in and I was like, oh, Tori's here to finish the job, because we can see her finding out where Miyagi-Do is. And it's like, I'm going to finish this bitch off once and for all. Until she started drowning her. I was like, damn, we're getting pretty heavy for this show that, like, you know, it doesn't take this serious. And she wakes up from her nightmare. I did like with Miguel was using the beer, and like you see Johnny like refilling his beer keg, and like Johnny refills it and gets beer all in Miguel's face. That part did make me laugh. And like, you know, it's nice to see Johnny get back to normal, quote unquote normal. I actually thought this would be done in 3 to 4 episodes. So them extending this to 7 is some really good restraint on the writer. So I will give them that. And, you know, Johnny just had another great line. How long does it take to get Facebook messages to Colorado? That's a couple of days, right? And just Miguel's look on his face where he's like, it's instantaneous, is great. And then Johnny trying to come up with names. He's not a name guy. when he's trying to call him the KKK. So, and, you know, Johnny's convinced that, you know, that Miguel, that Johnny will be able to recruit and get like the old members of Cobra Kai to come back and join. So that's going to be a weird thing. Will we have like just two teams line up, or will we get like Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT, which I feel that's the way we're going with this. And Sam not wanting to reopen Miyagi-Do, I'm okay with. But like Tim said, her parents made it a whole lot worse and painted that target exponentially bigger on her back, where it's like, we're going to have to get the little fat ass brother of yours to start doing some karate too, so he doesn't get his ass whooped.
Whole family has to be karate trained.
In reality, they just want her to do karate to help with her stress eating issue. Oh,
God.
All right, continuing on, Miguel returns to school and finds some of the students have prepared a welcome back banner and applaud him. Hawk comes over to him and they share a greeting. Hawk tells him that Cobra Kai has been crushing it recently. Before Miguel can talk to him about it, the bell rings. Miguel goes to his locker. He finds Dimitri nearby, his arm in a brace. Dimitri welcomes Miguel back and explains that he has a broken arm. Yasmin is there and complains about the cast smell. Once she leaves, Miguel asks how Dimitri broke it, and Dimitri says they have a lot to catch up on. Johnny goes and checks out a new facility for his dojo, complete with a juice bar. He tells the real estate agent that he'll take it, suggesting that they just seal the deal with a handshake rather than run a credit check on him. The agent would rather not, and Johnny is soon checking out a cheaper facility. The manager says it is as cheap as they come, and he knocked off some of the price because of the asbestos. It's still out of Johnny's price range. The owner tells him that any place in L.A. is going to cost Johnny. When he ends up at a public park, Johnny is thrilled to learn that the place is free. Daniel takes Sam fishing to spend some quality time with her. He likes the quiet. Sam doesn't. Daniel tries to talk about what's been going on through her life and catch dinner. He teaches Sam how to cast, and they talk how about the last time they were there was with Mr. Miyagi, and he taught Sam how to balance on the bow of the boat. Daniel invites her to try again. Sam figures out that he invited her there to trick her into doing karate. Sam doesn't believe him when he denies it, and Daniel asks for an explanation. Sam finally says that she froze while her friends were hurt and wonders if she'll ever be able to defend herself again. She asks Daniel to take her home. In the high school's cafeteria, Dimitri struggles with his tray and accidentally bumps into Kyler. Kyler takes the tray and throws it into the garbage. Meanwhile, Hawk refuses to let Mitch sit with the Cobra Kai students since Creed's kicked them off the team. Miguel comes in and asks Hawk how he could have broken Dimitri's arm. Hawk tells him that he should be thanking him for getting revenge on the Miyagi-Dos and that they're the ones who started the fight. Miguel says that isn't what Johnny taught them. Hawk says that Johnny isn't his sensei anymore. He insists that Johnny betrayed him, and Miguel says that Kreese has gotten in Hawk's head. He tells Hawk that he can change it if he goes joins Johnny's new dojo, and the others will come if he goes. Hawk asks Johnny about the new dojo, but is interrupted when Kyler shows the penis he drew on Dimitri's cast. All the students laugh, and Dimitri storms off. Miguel asks Hawk if Kyler and his bullies are his friends now, and walks off himself. So, Sean, we get Miguel coming back to school and kind of getting caught up on everything that's really happened. Johnny trying to find a new school and kind of, failing and basically having to settle on the park. And Daniel trying to trick Sam into training, much like Mr. Miyagi kind of tricked Daniel. So what do you think of this part of this episode? On mute.
It's pretty amazing that Miguel is catching up on everything 7 episodes in. It feels like he should have known a lot of what's going on. And he's finally back at school, getting caught up, doesn't like a lot of the stuff he's seen. I do like what's the popular girl's name with Dimitri? What's her name?
Oh,
Yasmin.
Yasmin. I like the Yasmin-Dimitri dynamic. I think that's kind of cool with the nerd getting the popular girl, or at least working on her. Johnny looking for... They got to be careful with Johnny, because they do a lot of this clueless Johnny stuff. Like, why does he think he's going to get a place with, like, juicing and juice bars for cheap? Like, there's a point making Johnny clueless, but I also think they got to be careful about making him just plain stupid. And I feel like this kind of makes him stupid, especially when he's outside of the public park talking to someone who just happens to be in the park saying, I can get this for free. That... I don't know. That didn't resonate well with me. It just made Johnny look really stupid, in my opinion. The fishing karate con out in the water and angry, whiny Sam and trying to be the good father with the daughter bonding stuff. I really didn't need over karate panic attacks. I didn't really feel this too much. And then the Hawk and Kai being mean to their former friends, and then the dick on the cast I thought was pretty harsh. But yeah, this episode's not working for me so far, and it's probably not just the Sam stuff, but I really don't like. Again, I understand making Johnny clueless, but making him look outright stupid, I'm not down with that.
Okay. Scott, what do you think of this part?
You know, like Sean brought up a good point. Like Miguel should have been caught up on this, especially in the, you know, it's supposed to
yeah,
be.
Does no
during,
one have a phone or
yeah,
anything?
Yeah, it's supposed to be during this time where everyone communicates via text message. I figured someone would have sent him a thing like, hey, there was another fight between Cobra Kai and Miyagi-Do, and Miyagi-Do got their ass whooped this time. But here's one thing that I had forgotten about, because I don't think they've had that many scenes together. I forgot that Miguel and Dimitri were friends. So when Miguel sees him at the locker and he's like, what happened? And I forgot that they were friends, because they were friends in season one for a couple of episodes. But then in season two, like, Dimitri is like sort of written off, and it's more of a Hawk and Dimitri thing. So it was nice for them to bring that back, with Miguel asking how Dimitri broke his arm and that cast goes all the way up his shoulder. It's absurd. Kyler is just a dick. I have a feeling he's probably going to usurp Hawk as the leader of Cobra Kai, just because I want to see him get his ass whooped all up and down the high school, or wherever they're going to have their next rumble at, probably the train tracks. But but like, you know, the sand stuff I could have done without. And like, I understand Mr. Miyagi was like important, but like, did like everything important in Sam and Daniel's life happen with Mr. Miyagi? It's like Sam had her first steps, Miyagi was holding her, you know, shit like that. So that you know, that could have been done without. But like, I just, and Hawk's just a piece of shit. Like, he was supposedly friends with Mitch, but like, Mitch got kicked out of Cobra Kai. Can't sit here, bro. And he's just as bad as Kyler. Sorry, I'm ranting.
All right. Tim, what's your thoughts on these scenes?
I don't find Hawk as bad as Kyler, only because Hawk has depth, which Kyler does not. And that's sort of something the show does, it seems like, where just when you think you've met like the ultimate dick, there's always like a bigger dick. That probably came out wrong, but I'm gonna go ahead and stick with that analogy. So yeah, I totally agree with Scott that they seem to be setting up Kyler as probably that heir to the throne, just the way that he's being written as pretty much utterly irredeemable. And it's weird, because he's, you know, he's been on the show since the first season, but hasn't been developed out at all. Perhaps that will change down the line, but clearly they want us to think that he is just the most despicable piece of shit there is. Now, characters they don't want us to think are pieces of shit. Samantha, I guess we get a decent, like, father-daughter bonding moment, sort of, with them, and the whole fishing scene, and he's teaching her actual secret karate techniques. I'm not as down on that as the other guys. I do think it's kind of a down moment in the season, where it sort of feels like we're pressing pause here, kind of at this past the halfway mark. But, you know, it's just sort of a pacing thing where we had a lot of rising action. Now we're sort of at a plateau, it feels like. And, you know, we haven't seen a whole lot of Robbie here lately, it feels like. He's sort of, I won't say has gotten lost in the shuffle, but just seems like they do a better job of keeping everyone in the mix, at least to some extent. And we just haven't had a whole lot going on with him as compared to other major characters. And yeah, Miguel being so out of the loop, I would agree. Just smack says all kinds are wrong. You know, these kids are in like a messenger group and talk all the time and have people leaving and being added on a fairly regular basis as their karate lives change quite rapidly. So, yeah, I don't really buy that he would be this out of the loop. Even if it, you know, it's his first day physically back in school, sure, but he's got to be talking to all these friends and relationships that he has maintained. Mm-hmm. Totally forgot about him and Dimitri even being friends. Like, I guess they're on opposite sides all of last season, but yeah, they did start out first season as friends. Maybe ended up becoming closer friends throughout the course of Miguel's recovery. Maybe, I don't know. But yeah, it felt a little jarring. I would agree.
Mm-hmm. All right. So continue on. Excuse me. Daniel takes Sam back to their car. He tells her that he's always there for her. Sam insists that he can help her, and Daniel asks to walk him through what happened. She describes how she fought up when the fight started, and Daniel asks if it has to do with Tori. Sam says that it does, and she was worried that she would get hurt again. Miguel would fall, and Ravi would run. Daniel says that Cobra Kai is way out of control, and Sam tells him that she's scared and feels alone. Her father assures her that she's not all alone, and what she's feeling is nothing to be ashamed of, and suggests as they stop somewhere on the way home. Excuse me. Johnny arrives at the new school. And finds Miguel at his locker. He tells Miguel that he found a new spot for their dojo. Miguel admits that he hasn't been able to recruit anyone, and Kreese has turned the students into assholes. Johnny sees Hawk and his gang and goes over to them and apologizes for screwing up and making it about him. He says that he took the easy way out and gave up. Hawk doesn't believe him and tells him that Johnny bailed on him long before the fight. Johnny got soft and they paid the price. Angry, Johnny tells Hawk that he made them what he is now, not Kreese. He says that Kreese doesn't care about any of them and that they can whine about the past like pussies if they want. Johnny says that their lives will end up in the shitter and they shouldn't forget he warned them. Or they can just sack up and join his dojo. Johnny gives them the location, says that they should be there if they want to train the right way. Daniel and Sam go to the sports arena and Daniel takes Sam out on the court. He shows her the spot where he beat Johnny, explains that he almost lost to Fear in the second championship. Daniel thought he was ready and was paralyzed when his opponent beat him to the mat. However, he overcame his fear with Miyagi's help. He also told Daniel not to lose his fear. Miyagi yelled at Daniel to fight and focus and draw on karate inside himself. Sam's father admits that he got up and fought and he needed to hear Miyagi's advice. Ultimately, he had to be the one to get up. Daniel tells Sam that she's the only one who can get up and when she's down, and promises that he'll always be there to help him. So we get a little, this is a lot of, Sam and Daniel trying to get to the bottom of it and help her. Meanwhile, Johnny is trying to actively recruit and try to, kind of right some wrongs. So Scott, what do you think of this section of this episode?
I love Johnny just showing up at the school and Miguel's like, how'd you get past security? And Johnny goes, I went here. I know all the ins and outs. It's like, mm-hmm. Did they not change anything in 30 years? What kind of shitty school is this? Even my shithole high school has changed stuff around and I've only been gone like 10 years. But it was just like, all right, I got to suspend disbelief for that. But, it was nice to have like Johnny be able to talk to the Cobra Kai people without Kreese being there. And hopefully he's been able to like turn some heads and have them join the new dojo. And we'll see what happens. And with the Daniel and Sam stuff, I thought he was talking about the first one, but I have no recollection of the third one, which is what they show the flashbacks to. But it looks like he was about to get his ass whooped and, you know, Miyagi ran on the court and helped him, and we'll see what happens with that. And it was a lot of exposition right there. Sorry you had to read all that, but it didn't feel like much happened to like it pushed some of the plot along, especially with the new dojo and the Cobra Kai people, which we'll be seeing at the end of this episode.
All right, Tim, what do you think of this part?
Yeah, I would back that up with more character movement than actual plot movement. I think it's amazing that we used a callback to the abysmal Karate Kid 3, which I still kind of think might be better than the abysmal Karate Kid 2. I'm sorry. But use that to draw a line back to Sam's current struggle, reminding us that in this terrible movie, Daniel LaRusso was getting his ass beat and was scared of Cobra Kai's new recruit secret weapon, the psycho looked like the Oklahoma City Bomber, Mike
Timothy
Bars.
McVeigh. Oh.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. He looks like that guy. Yeah. Getting his ass kicked by that dude and, has to rally and has to, learn from Miyagi's example and impart that to his daughter, because Mr. Miyagi is the most special and important person in the lives of all of the LaRusso family members, because that's the show. So pretty cool with that. I did want to respond to one of Sean's criticisms earlier about Johnny just looking like too much of an idiot. And I kind of agree with that. Like, I'm good with him being clueless to just sort of the ways of the modern world, but it's funny that he doesn't like know how a public park works, but at the same time, you do sort of sit there and go, really? Like, he would know what a park is. Like, it's, yes. It is ridiculous. Like, it's fun for a gag, but it sort of falls apart under just any kind of scrutiny. But the show is not really designed for scrutiny, so I kind of have to make my peace with that one. But I do see where you're coming from, where you run the risk of just making him too much of an imbecile to the point of, like, you can no longer suspend your disbelief that anyone could even function being that stupid in the world today.
I think it maybe speaks to, like, maybe Johnny had his head up his own ass for so long that he didn't really grow up, or that's why he's stuck in the 80s and all that stuff.
Well, maybe why don't you just go to the public beach? He knows what the beach was. He was there all the time in the Karate Kid movie. Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying.
That's where he threw his phone out, too.
Yes.
So, all right. So Sean, what did you think of this section of this episode?
Yeah, not much to say. You know, Johnny talking to the Cobra Kai students was trying to appeal to them and get them back on his side was okay. The one thing I will say, even though I shit on Sam LaRusso and this whole story with her and her karate PTSD, I do like kind of the correlation with Danny's cowardice and his injury and what happened to her, which in theory I think was a lot worse actually, because she almost got hit with those spiked brass knuckles or whatever you want to call them by Tori. I feel like her near-death experience was a lot worse than this injury in the Karate Kid 3. And obviously almost being killed in Karate Kid 2 should have trumped the Karate Kid 3 injury, but I digress. But yeah, so I kind of like that tie-in. That made sense. And, you know, it also made me realize that one scene for Karate Kid 3, how much of a whiny asshole LaRusso was too when he was younger. So maybe I should take it a little bit easier on Sam based her dad was being a whiny little asshole, which would probably translate to her being the same. So...
All right. So finishing up the episode at the school, Kyler and his friends continue bullying Dimitri. Yasmin comes over and afterwards and asks Dimitri for a marker. She signs Dimitri's cast with it, saying that she loves Dimitri's quote unquote big dick. Yasmin says that it's better and hands the marker back to Dimitri, who thanks her. She says that she knows what it's like. Dimitri tells her that he understands. She smiles at him, then says that they shouldn't make it a scene. Dimitri agrees and they go their separate ways. That night, Sam is in Daniel's dojo performing a kata. Daniel comes in, sees her, smiles, and says that he knew she'd be back. He tosses her a bow staff and attacks her with another one, saying that they can train together. Daniel puts his earlier casting instructions to use, and Sam parries Daniel's strikes. She smiles, her confidence restored, and Daniel tells her to go again. The next day, Johnny goes to the park and tells Miguel and a few other students that came, including Mitch, that things are different now. He says they don't need a roof and four walls, and that they don't need a dojo to beat another dojo. Johnny says that they need a name and commands their respect. He offers the name Eagle Fang Karate. Mitch points out the shirts that eagles don't have fangs, but Johnny doesn't want to hear it and tosses them the t-shirts. He tells his students to fall in line. Hawk and two of his gang walk up. More Cobra Kai students come behind him, including Kyler and Tori. Creases with them and tells Johnny that he's not there for a fight. He invites Johnny to come back to Cobra Kai where he belongs, and Johnny says that he's never teaming up with Kreese again. He tells Kreese that the shit he's been feeding them is to blame, and that Kreese insists that he cares about his students. They're strong and wouldn't stop until their opponent is in a coma. Miguel steps forward, and Hawk does as well. Kreese holds Hawk back and tells Johnny that there won't be another offer. Johnny figures that's good, and Kreese tells him that he's going to regret his choice and leaves with his students, ending the episode. So, Tim, how do you think this episode closed?
Okay, so we have a now third karate faction starting up, Eagle Fang. Wow, what a name. It's a very Johnny name for his karate dojo. You gotta love it. I do have concerns that maybe this the young cast is a little bit thin to be spread across now three dueling karate dojos. But that remains to be seen, you know, how things will really shake down. This is just the early stages of getting it up and running. Also interesting to note, like, which kids are loyal to Johnny versus totally bought into Kreese's Cobra Kai philosophy. Like, you can tell some have kind of just crossed that line. And the way that Cobra Kai under Kreese is behaving more almost cult-like seems to appeal to a certain mentality and certain kids versus others who are like, hey, I just wanted to, you know, boost my confidence and do some badass karate. And I really like, you know, Sensei Lawrence. So, you know, I kind of like seeing who lands where. And if the show has taught us anything, that these loyalties are far from permanent. So I guess we may be in a very different place by the end of the season.
Sean, what do you think of the end of this one?
Popular girl liking the big nerd dick was good. I thought you kind of see that romance blossoming a little bit. So that's pretty cool. I have nothing to say about the stick training because that was stupid. With Samantha and her stick and fighting, the Sam stuff is just not clicking for me in this episode. And then, you know, I like that that they're out in the park and the students show up and then the Kai shows up. It was a terrible speech Johnny gave. Eagle Fang is a terrible name, terrible name, but I also get it. Eagles eat snakes and they have to have fangs, I guess. So it's typical Johnny. I also, like you said, you don't need a dojo to be a dojo. And then I thought it was a kind of a cool swerve as the others show up. At first, you think that maybe they're going to join them. And then all of a sudden, they come with Kreese from around the corner. So I think he also had a really cruel line where he makes a comment about you show mercy and you end up in a coma, which really fired up Miguel. So I like that line. So Kreese is just a straight up prick. No doubt about it. I don't care what his backstory is. He's a straight up asshole. And I want to see him get his ass kicked really, really bad because we have yet to see him fight really anybody yet at all. So pretty cool closing to what I would consider maybe a blah kind of episode for me, but I still like the end of the episode.
All right. Scott, what do you think of the ending of this one?
Yeah, I love the ending. Like Sean said, like, it was kind of a blah episode, but like the last like 5 minutes, it's like, oh, well, I guess I'm going to have to sit around and watch the next episode to find out what's going to happen. But I do love that they're like, what can kill a snake? And someone says a mongoose, and Johnny goes, give me a real animal. So he doesn't believe that mongooses are real, which made me laugh. And like, he
obviously never saw Ricky Tikki Tavi. Come on.
Yeah. And then he threw the Eagle Fang karate shirt to Mitch, and it was kind of small. And he just tells Mitch, yeah, you have to do some more crunches. So that made me laugh.
Stress eating issues with that shirt on.
Yes. You know, Yasmin and Dimitri have just been flirting on and off all season, and you see it more now. And she admit that, like, she knows what it feels like to have people laugh at her after Aisha gave her the front face and wedgie, so she knows how it feels, and that humbled her, as the Iron Sheik would say. We knew Sam was going to get back into fighting, and I believe we're going to see some of that stuff that Chosen used on Daniel last episode. I think Sam's going to use that on Tori to, like, basically shut down her body, and then she'll finish her. we all knew that Hawk and everything one was not going to do, but it was just a nice scene setting the stage of like basically like the lines in the sand, and Hawk's on one side, Miguel's on the other. I did think it was pretty interesting with Tori and Kyler walking together, because at the end of the day, this is a teenage show. So I wonder if they go down that with like a relationship, like to have Kyler, who used to bully Miguel, now getting with Miguel's ex-girlfriend. So I think that's a little interesting and just something for us to watch out for. But yeah, I can't wait to go over the final three episodes in our next podcast.
Yep. And with that, that's going to end part three of our four-part series. Yes, guys, we're almost at the end of Cobra Kai season three. It has been a tremendous season. I can't wait to finish with you guys the final three episodes. Also, though, we are going to be kind of double dipping for a little bit, because when you're hearing this, WandaVision will have started and they're dropping the first two episodes on Disney Plus. So we'll be covering that as well. And we're going to be doing that weekly. We're going to be able to, have a little, go back to what we did with Mandalorian, have a little bit shorter, because we're trying to kind of compress all these into a few episodes for Cobra Kai, since again, Netflix did drop them all at one time, and you know, we don't expect everybody to listen to this over 10 weeks because, you know, everybody's 10 weeks from when Cobra Kai dropped, we're going to be talking about like three or four other shows by that time. So I want to thank the guys once again. That is Sean Kidd, Tim Capel, and Scott Schiffler for getting together on Pop Goes to the Couch to talk about Cobra Kai season three. So like I said, we are three quarters of the way through. We have one more episode of this show to do. We will talk about eight, nine, and 10, Cobra Kai season three, finishing out, and give our speculations on where they're going to go in season four. So thank you for listening, and we'll take you out on the final part of this series. Take care, everybody.